first case, please.
Lamar Company against the City of Richmond, John G. Chip Dix and Jerry Z. Booth Jr. for the appellant.
Just a minute till we get people settled. All right, you may proceed.
Madam Chief Justice, Justice of the Court, my name is Chip Dix. I'm here on behalf of the Lamar Companies that own the Mayo's Island Billboard, lottery board that is you cross the James River. Mr. Bynum represents the landowner in a similar declaratory judgment action, and his case is next. We have agreed that I would go first. This is a case of first impression, and Lamar has fully stated its position in its brief. This is the first case where this court has had an opportunity to interpret the 2008 amendment to Section 15.2-2307, which is commonly called the Virginia Vested Rights Statute. The 2008 amendment created paragraph 4, which entitled a property owner who did not have copies of their building permits or their other documentation to be able to have their building or structure convert to a non-conforming building or structure at the end of 15 years after the local government had collected taxes. It does not deal with non-conforming uses. It only deals with a non-conforming building or structure. And it establishes that a local government cannot require that building or structure to be removed. And you can imagine that in many cases, most homeowners do not have copies of their building permits or their building permits from previous owners. And likewise, it would create gridlock in the lending community if lenders were not able to rely upon what the assessment was and what the assessment square footage was in a particular building or structure. So that's basically what this case is about.
Mr. Dix, several questions that I want to ask you are probably more appropriately asked to the City of Richmond, but of course they're not here because they didn't file their briefs on time.
Yes, sir.
So if the question seems a little odd being addressed to you, it's because there's nobody for me to address it to.
Right? Understood, sir.
When this case, you and Mr. Shia's case together deal with this vested rights statute, and then the next case we deal with has to do with the variance.
Right? That is
back
correct.
To back. This case has more cross currents than a riptide at Virginia Beach. I've never seen anything that lasted so long in the courts, in the BZA, in the circuit court, up here, back there. And then it comes back again, and I look at it, and I find it extraordinary that the demur below was granted on a basis that was not contained in the city's demur. And from looking at the transcript, it appears that everybody was surprised at the circuit court when that happened.
I think that's a fair statement, Your Honor.
Well, we have a huge body of law, and this is obviously a friendly question to you, but we have a huge body of law that says you can't grant a demur on something that hasn't been requested. And so with regard to this particular issue, which is an interesting issue, whether this is an enabling statute or not, how can we possibly even decide the question without getting to the demur procedurally and simply reverse it, send it back so that it can be handled on an appropriate demur?
Your Honor, I understand that perspective. That was not raised, obviously, by the City of Richmond. And likewise, in the error that was granted at the writ panel, the discussion was focused on whether or not the demur was proper with respect to whether this was an enabling statute and whether, therefore, localities had the option to adopt a vested rights statute or not, a local ordinance. I take the position, as you recall from the writ panel, that the vested rights statute is required. And so I understood that that was the issue that was granted in error number one. The sufficiency of the demur and whatnot was in error number two. That's most of what the city focused on in its response brief. I would agree with Your Honor that in this particular case, That issue was not raised by the city of Richmond at the time. Quite frankly, I think we were all surprised that the trial judge said, well, you know, looking at paragraph 1 of the vested rights statute that requires and has a provision about subsequent ordinances being adopted, there is no such provision in paragraph 4, which is the paragraph that applies in this case. It says notwithstanding any local ordinance to the contrary. So I think we were all surprised that the trial judge ruled the way he did.
Well, I can't speak for my colleagues, but I will speak for me. And I look at this case, and we have rules on demur, and we also have rules on what are advisory opinions, what would be dictum. If this is not a proper demur before us, anything we would do in deciding the case would be either advisory and or dicta. Why shouldn't the court simply reverse, send this back to the trial court, let it be tried on a demur that's properly before the court, and maybe you folks could get this trial judge to decide the pleas and bar, which is where this case really needs to be resolved.
Your Honor, I don't disagree with that approach. Court has further questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Well, I think while you're there, because I only speak for myself, you probably ought to address whether this is an enabling statute.
I'd be happy to, Your Honor. When you look at 15.2.2307, that statute was passed in paragraph 4 by the General Assembly in 2008. It starts with a provision that says, notwithstanding any other provision of law, and this course recently, as recent as January in the James City County Proffer case, ruled that in terms of what you look for language to determine whether or not a particular statute has retroactive and prospective application, you look at the language and the word any and the word notwithstanding certainly give clear intent from the General Assembly that any existing or future ordinance that was in existence as of July 1 of 2008 would be affected by that statute. Again, I was quite surprised the trial court felt that that provision, with that language notwithstanding any provision of local ordinance, would be interpreted to be an enabling statute of any sort. So I strongly would suggest to you that on the facts before you, and the only issue in this case was it an enabling statute or not? And secondly, the taxes have been paid, that was undisputed, and the question is, based upon the payment of taxes for 15 years, that, under that circumstance, created took the unknown or uncertain status of any building or structure and turned it into a non-conforming structure. That's exactly what that statute did. So based upon the evidence before this court, we believe that you could reverse and enter judgment for Lamar based upon the fact that the record is clear that the taxes have been paid, the record is clear that it's been 15 years, and the record is clear that 2307 paragraph 4 is not an enabling statute.
Well, what actually wins the day for me, if you will, is that statute in part tells the localities what they can't do. That's hardly enabling.
You are correct, Mr. Justice. I mean, what the statute does in the first part of the statute, in paragraph A, is defines significant affirmative governmental act. And that's where we believe the city and the trial judge were confused, looking at whether there was a subsequently adopted ordinance that changed something that was entitled under those six or seven items that are now listed in the significant affirmative governmental act section of the first part of the vested rights statute. I would submit to you that paragraph 4 that deals with the non-conforming buildings or structures, it proscribes and says a local government shall not declare that it's illegal, shall not require its removal based upon those things. I don't know how that could be any more clear.
Counsel, I've been accused of piling on before, but never piling on with friendly questions. And so this question really ought to be addressed to the empty chair. But just as with Justice Lemons, I can only address it to you.
Yes, sir.
Rather than enabling, it really appears to be a statute of repose. And I note that it actually has the same 15 years repose period as 8.01.236. Would you agree?
Madam Justice and Mr. Justice, I would absolutely agree. And I would suggest to you that that was part of the discussion in the General Assembly as to why the 15-year period was picked as opposed to some other time frame. Madam Justice and members of the court, thank you very much.
Thank you. Call the next case.